This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening, this is the evening edition. I'm Umar Pagan, I'm Pake Pagan, and today we're going to head now to Rawang. We're going to a house in Kuala Garing that's nearly 100 years old. The family that stays there, the Sidhu family, has made this house their home for about 60 years now. But for the past few years, the family has been kept up at night worrying about the fact that their home could be demolished at any time.
See, sorry for the mess. We are also trying with the mess in the midst of trying to pack in case we have to leave. So we are also packing our clothes.
That's Jimmy Sidhu, one of the members of the family that we're talking about. Today, we're going to tell the story of this family's struggle to keep their home when they're being asked to make way for development. The story behind this house began back in 1920. The tin mining company, Berjuntai Tin Dredging Berhad, held the lease to the land in this area at the time. The company built houses for their employees and officials. Jimmy's grandfather, Nika Singh, who was working for Berjuntai Tin Dredging, bought this particular house in 1959.
What happened is there was a slowdown in the global mining activity because of the prices. So a lot of mining activities stopped in this area. When they stopped, they kind of packed up and they probably moved on to another country or another markets. And that's the time they offered to my grandfather, who was working as an employee, and he was a chief clerk. So he said, Mr. Singh, would you like to buy this house? We are giving the opportunity to all the employees first. There were five bungalows. Currently, only one mine and another one near the school is standing over here. There's no longer any other bungalow. They're all vanished. Only two left, yes. So what happened was in 1959, when they offered to my grandfather for $3,500, he then agreed to purchase the house. When he purchased the house for $3,500 Malayan dollars, then he moved his entire family here.
And the house, having sheltered the Sidhu family for nearly 60 years, has been the witness of many special occasions.
Since 1959, we had 21 weddings, including mine in 2005. That was the last wedding. And then we had 32 children born in this house. So there's a huge memory connection to this house. Currently, all of us call this house grandfather's house. So, if this house is demolished, we will not just lose the memories, we will lose the identity of grandfather's house. Because when we have family unions, due to the family conflicts, people normally don't come to each other's house. They normally go to the grandfather's house because that's more like a neutral ground. Everybody's got their memories attached to that.
This house isn't just a grandfather house to the family. It's also a gathering point for the Sikh community living in the area.
My grandfather's been the president of the Gurdwara, the Sikh temple, for I think nearly 20 years. Thereafter, my father was the president of the Sikh temple. Then my brother was a member in the community. Now I'm the treasurer. So the connection of this particular family, the Sidhu family, to the Sikh temple is a very strong connection. So whenever we have gatherings, this particular house is always used as a gathering for all the Sikh community because we've conducted a lot of weddings which are not actually our immediate family weddings. In fact, others have also done weddings over here because of the vast land and obviously the relationship my father and my grandfather has with the Gurdwara, with the temple. So beside the Gurdwara, our house is also known as another focal point for the local Sikhs.
According to Jimmy, the house might be also one of the first in Malaysia to have electricity.
Rawang was the first town to have electricity. And the people that brought electricity to Malaysia in Rawang were the mines operators, the mining dredging operators. What happened was, when they were operating the dredging over here, they needed electricity. They brought generators from England. And what happened, this particular house being the accountant's house of the dredging company. So they kind of gave the electricity to their own employee first before giving to the Rawang railway station, Rawang police, and then the streets. So there's a strong connection that this particular house was the first house to be electrified. And I have documents to show back in 1962 when my grandfather applied for electricity on that form, and that particular time was the Central Electricity Board, that on the form he mentioned that there was already an existing supply. including water. There was no water supply. We had water tank. We were doing water harvesting back in 1960. We had a water tank, which is, of course, now the water tank is damaged. So even water was also self-sustained over here.
Since the 1950s, Bergentai Tin Dredging had left and other mining companies had taken their place. In 2007, Jimmy's family received an eviction notice from the current mining company, which now holds the lease to the land surrounding the bungalow. The company wants the family to vacate the land for quarry expansion work. Jimmy's family, who'd been staying here since 59, didn't move. The house just meant too much to them.
So, 2007, they sent us an eviction notice mentioning that you have to vacate this house because you are a squatter. You are illegally squatting in this land. And we didn't agree to that. And what we were told that they are actually removing 134 houses in this Kuala Garang area, including my house, to realign the river for flood mitigation. There's never been flood in Kuala Garang. There was only once it flooded 2001, but never in Kuala Garang. It was near to the school area, which is kilometers away from here. So under the pretext of flooding, they evicted 124 people, and there were 11 people did not agree to the program. And I believe the 11 people are still fighting for their right, including myself. So they successfully demolished all the 134 houses and relocated them again somewhere deep in Kuala Garang.
According to Jimmy, though his grandfather had bought the house in 59, the land lot has gone missing. Now the family lacks the necessary documentation to prove their ownership of the house.
When my grandfather bought, there was a memorandum of transfer, and then we also had a separate lot number for this particular house. The lot was lot 177, yeah. And surprisingly, the lot has vanished. In the records, they can't find the lot anymore. And my grandfather has been applying for title for, obviously, alienation since 1967. We have applied 7 times, and he's been being rejected every time we apply. So we are quite saddened that, you know, they never recognized the fact that we actually bought this property. And there was a legal transaction between the previous lessee and with my grandfather.
So the Sidhu family and the mining company were engaged in a decade-long legal battle which ended last year, and their family on the losing end.
So obviously the lawsuit ended up in a very disappointing judgment towards us, because the judge recognized us as a settler. Therefore, he paid us absurd compensation of 15,000. Plus 3,500 for moving costs, total 18,500. I don't know how did he calculate that. In fact, if you would have bought, if you had a currency, let's say the Malayan currency of 3,500 ringgit, I'm sure today is worth around a simple calculation around 350,000, you know, easily. So we find it very, very saddening that the judge gave a judgment of a compensation of 18,500, which we did not accept. Every time that 18,500 hits my mind, I just get so sad. That is that 60 years of my family history, memories, is worth 18,500? It really makes me really mad. And we have spent a lot of money on this legal battle. So it's no longer about the money. It's about the memories. It's about the grandfather's house.
The family had been required to vacate the premises by September 20th this year. They were granted an 8-day stay of demolition by the Shah Alam High Court, which lasted till September 28th. That date arrived and passed. Another appeal by the family to stay the demolition for a longer period of time was dismissed in November. Now the family is turning to the National Heritage Department in the hopes that the house would be gazetted as a heritage site.
We have successfully engaged Jabatan Warisan this time. So I'm hoping that Jabatan Warisan come up with a decision quickly. If Jabatan Warisan says this house is gazetted as heritage, we will be very happy, because regardless whether we get a chance to stay in this house or not, but our memories will always be here, you know. So the state government has been quite helpful in the sense that they've also returned to Jabatana and told them to hold on the demolition And I think we've been receiving calls. I think they visited the house twice, Pejabat Tanah and Kalyan Shah Alam. So I believe there might be some positive outcome from there. And coupled with Mantri Basar, our state government, maybe, you know, finding a solution.
Jimmy and his brother Ranjit took us on a tour around the house. It is a two-storied Sino-Malay Palladian design wooden bungalow.
That's my mom. Mom has lived here since she got married. So she's been staying here since 1963. That's like good 50 years? 54 years.
All my children grew up here.
Jimmy's kids are the fourth generation of the Sidhu family to have lived here. He was also proud to say that while several renovations have been made to accommodate their huge family, the structure of the house and much of its material remain the same from the day it was built.
Okay, this is the pillars that I was talking to you. We have 22 of them. And that's the reason is we actually can withstand the quarry blasting. These stairs are still the original stairs. We never did anything, no repair work or whatsoever. It's still the same. Obviously, when we moved in 1959, there were no, what they call, windows. They were open concept, you know, the Spanish windows. So then we have changed that because of the quarry operation. It was very dusty. My grandfather had to put closed windows. The previous occupant was the company accountant, a British man, an Englishman from the UK. And the house was basically too big, but the bedrooms were only two bedroom. Two bedroom ensuite with one drawing room. That's all he had, and the kitchen. So the original structure is still the same.
One thing that frustrates Jimmy is that the current mining company only has another 8 years until their lease expires in the area. According to Jimmy, 8 years of mining is not a good trade-off for nearly 100 years of history.
You know, my fight could be personal. People might be thinking that I'm trying to save this house because I live here. No, I'm trying to give this history, you know, I'm trying to preserve this history for the public, for the Rayat. You know, we might not live here forever, but let the memories live forever. Let the history live for the others to enjoy and to be educated.
That was Jimmy Sidhu from the Sidhu family, who's fighting to save their family home in Rawang. In a bit, we'll find out more about our national heritage selection process. Stay tuned to the Evening Edition on BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
This is the Evening Edition. I'm Uma Paganampke Pagan. Now, earlier we heard from the Sidhu family about their struggle to keep their home from making way for development. They've nominated their house to the National Heritage Department for consideration to be gazetted as a National Heritage Site. A decision has yet to be announced. Now, we're going to find out more about this process from Elizabeth Cardosa, President of Badan Warisan Malaysia. Here, Elizabeth talks about the criteria by which a site or building is determined to be of national heritage value under the National Heritage Act 2005.
There's the evidence that they expect you to put forward and the rationale as to why it should be designated National Heritage. And the assessment for this, the criteria that is used is outlined in Section 67 of the law, which talks about, you know, its historic value, its architectural value, its scientific value, some very famous event happened there. Was it the first of its type? Those are the benchmarks, so to speak. Having said that, this is a National Heritage Act. So the structures, the buildings, the objects, the places have to have national significance. Like, you know, I mean, shophouses are quite unique to this region, this area, and shophouses in, you know, Georgetown, Malacca, Ipoh, you know, Kota Bharu, they're all slightly different. But a shophouse itself, if you take it as an individual shophouse, may not have national value lah. Because, number one, there are many. Number two, it's spread throughout the country, so it's not rare. These are also some attributes that you could be looking at when you're looking for national heritage status.
Another criterion is who values these sites and what they mean to the community around them.
With all places, with all buildings, there are levels of significance, what we call cultural significance. And these levels of significance have to do with, you know, who values them. You take the Twin Towers, for example, you know, or you take, you know, KLIA or, you know, any of these monumental buildings, all right? And they are there as, you know, national symbols, symbols of progress, symbols, you know, whatever these symbols are. You may not ever have seen it or visited it, but you still feel a sense of ownership. You know, you still feel a sense of belonging, and you still, you know, want its protection. And when you go back to why will people protest, well, you have to go back to the personal. How far does that place give you a sense of identity? Because while something which is World Heritage gives the world a sense of identity, imagine how much more of a sense of identity it gives to the people who live in the neighborhood, who live in the place. So these are things that we really have to acknowledge. And when there are protests, and there are, it is because of this value that we place on it, this sentiment that we place on it. And that's very important to recognize. But there are other things that are taken into consideration at that point of time. You know, if you go back to the Petronas Twin Towers, I mean, there was a race course there. So there were people who valued the race course. But then this national project came about. And while there were people who objected to it, nevertheless, you know, there were other considerations. You may agree or disagree, it doesn't matter. But, you know, when you take it down that way and you quantify it in those terms, if you are able to justify the change for the greater good, then, yeah, you know, then people will sit back and accept it. If the change is just for an individual good, maybe less solar. It is, how do you balance this?
Striking this balance is the difficult part when it comes to development versus conservation.
When we look at heritage, we really have to understand that, you know, change is inevitable. So it is, how do you rate it based on the significance of this particular place to not just the individual, but to the community around it, to the town it's in or the village it's in, to the state in which it's located, and to the country in which it belongs. So the more voices will always protest when something has got a bigger reach. That's why, you know, you look at when schools are going to be changed, and there is always a lot of protest, you know, because people have memories of that. And wanting to keep, it's not just a sentiment, but it's sort of, you know, being able to have this physical, that's what buildings are. They are physical repositories of this set of memories. And that's why they're important to retain. I'm not saying exclusively, not everything, you know, there can be no change, not at all, you know, but that is one of the things that we need to weigh. If you lose it, how much do you lose? Because you can never recover it. Now, that's the other thing about heritage. Once it's gone, literally, it's gone forever. Like anything else is a replica. You know, so those are the kinds of things that we need to understand, I think, and look at.
That was Elizabeth Cardoso, president of Badan Warisan Malaysia. If you missed any part of this program, don't forget that you can download the podcast by searching for Heritage or Hindrance on our BFM app that's available on Apple's App Store and on Google Play. You've been listening to the Evening Edition. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.